And we'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 182. Janet, can you...
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Senate Bill 182 would create an exemption from the requirement for child safety booster seats for if the rear seat of the vehicle does not have a shoulder belt, and this is because the seats are designed to be used with shoulder belts and not lap belts, and it's determined by traffic safety people that it's safer for a child to be in a lap belt than in a booster seat that doesn't have a shoulder strap attachment. Mr. Chair, and the Department of Transportation is here to testify. It is their, the bill was introduced at their request, and I also wanted to introduce for the record a letter that's at your place this morning from Lisa Millett at the Department of Human Services supporting the bill.
Thank you, Janet. Troy?
Mr. Chair, well, Ms. Patrick, can I ask a question? This is, will be the first time that I'll be in a committee hearing a Senate bill. And is it exactly the same? Is it treated exactly the same?
As far as I know, yeah.
And we could amend it here and whatever.
Yes, we could. And then if they are amended here, then they go to a back to them for concurrence or to a conference committee.
And if they're not amended here, then we pass that up to the floor, it passes, and then
goes to the governor's desk.
Thank you.
Good morning, Troy. Thank you for the patience waiting on me to get here.
That's okay. Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales, manager of the Transportation Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And as Janet presented, this bill does create an exemption to the booster seat law, which was passed by this body last session, where we have an issue that current booster seats that adults and grandparents and others can buy are built and to be used with a lap and shoulder belt configuration, not lap only. And there are no booster seats available on the market today that are designed to be used for lap only. So as our recommendation and why we pre-filed this bill was to allow the situation where the child is 4 or 5 years old, under 60 pounds, to be able to be in a lap only situation so we don't have adults trying to fit a booster seat in a lap belt situation where that's not what they were built to do, and we have no studies indicating that that is any safer than the lap only. So it is a minor change to the current booster seat law. It does put us in compliance with California and Washington, so the West Coast would have all of the similar laws and similar exemptions in order to meet current equipment that is available, and we aren't putting a demand on our public where they cannot meet the law based on what's available on the market. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Troy, so what this does, if the an older car has a lap belt only in the rear seat, it allows the driver to place the children in the lap belt without putting them in a booster seat. Right?
I'm sure that is correct for the 4 and 5 year olds. For the smaller children, for the child safety seats and the infant seats, those are made to be able to be with lap only, and so that's not exempting the infant through four. It's the 4 and 5 year olds under 60 pounds, the toddlers.
Representative Greenland.
Thank you, sir. Troy, if a car is equipped like one of the vehicle I had recently that had two shoulder belts on the side and a lap only belt in the middle, you would still expect the child to be in the lap only. I mean, in the shoulder belt and a booster seat. Is that right? If the car has it in.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlick, that is the safer place to be, is in the booster seat in the lap shoulder situation. It does allow, though, if the adult wanted to, that they could put the child in the lap only.
In that case, child could be in the lap.
Correct.
Any other questions, Mr. Troy?
You could also, if they wanted to put that seat in there and still use it across the middle, they could do that and not be fined the way they are now.
Mr. Chair, Representative, could you repeat that? I wasn't sure.
Well, if you have the safety seat and you only have the belt around the middle, I realize that's not the safe way to do it. But if they happen to belt them in that way, they're okay also. They're not going to get fined. They don't have to throw the seat away, do they?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I believe you are correct. Yep.
believe.
Yeah, I'm not. I would have, Mr. Chair and Representative, the reason why I hesitate is I'm not sure. In this case, you're dealing with the question of what's called appropriate fit or appropriate use. It's not addressed in the bill, and it's something we've asked the Attorney General's opinion on in other cases. And the situation you're asking, I don't think we formally asked for the opinion to say booster seat and lap belt only, is that still going to fit under what's called appropriate fit, which is what the language in the bill is describing.
Follow up, if I can get at it. Let's say they've been strapping them in that way already, even though it's technically illegal. And they continue to do that. Are they going to get fined because now they've got him in that seat strapped wrong, you know, with the center belt?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't think law enforcement is going to be that aggressive because they're watching to make sure that the children have some sort of protection and not just loose in the vehicle, which is generally what it is that they notice in order to pull the car over.
Thank you, Troy.
Yes.
Representative Greenland.
If I may comment, Troy, I have the answer to my own question by reading, which is never a bad idea. This only applies if the rear seat is not equipped with shoulder belts. So if they're equipped with shoulder belts, my assumption is even if they have a center belt, a lap belt in the middle, you still have to use the shoulder belt, I think. But unless you had 3-4-year-olds in your car, heaven forbid. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do remember that experience.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Thank you. Janet?
Mr. Chair, there is no requirement that the child be in the back seat under when they're just in a lap belt, is there?
Right, airbag, do you want that?
But there's no requirement in the bill for them to be in the back seat.
There's an old car, they probably wouldn't have an airbag.
Mr. Chair, and Janet, I believe that the bill is indicating there's a preference for children under 12 to be in the back. That it does talk about preferential. If you have multiple people in a vehicle, that you end up making sure that the children are put in the places in the back and with the appropriate equipment first before you consider where adults sit.
Is that in current law? Can you find it up? Excuse
Correct.
Me, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Is that someplace in current law or... Is that in the new language?
Mr. Chair, Janet, I believe that was part of the last session bill that talked about the preferential and as well as appropriate fit were brought into the booster bill from last session.
Mr. Chair.
The
reason for the child in the back seat is because of the airbag, and the older cars wouldn't have the airbag, so why couldn't they ride in front?
Mr. Chair and Representative Honor, you are correct, but also that the rear seat, no matter whether there's airbags or not, the rear center seat is the safest place in a vehicle due to the safety cage construction of the vehicle. And so in order to give the children the safest spot, center back is where we recommend they go, no matter what the design or style of the car is.
But it's really not. When the driver reaches back to whack him, he can lose control of the car. But here you can
whack him right up there.
I got 10 grandkids,
Troy.
I want to get where I can get at them.
Thank you, Troy.
Very thank you, sir.
We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 182 and open a work session on Senate Bill 182.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dingfelder.
I move that there's no amendments. Is that correct?
No amendments.
I move Senate Bill 182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dingfelder moves Senate Bill 182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Troy, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Gilman?
Yes.
Representative Greenlee?
Yes.
Representative Mabry?
Excuse.
Representative Zahner?
Yes.
Representative Byer?
Excuse.
Representative Dingfelder?
Aye.
Chair Brown?
Aye. Motion carries. Can we put this on the consent calendar, please? Please. The chair would...
Chair, I move that we put Senate Bill 182 on the consent calendar.
Representative Gilman moves that we place Senate Bill 182 on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, it's on the consent calendar. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 187, and Janet, get us up to speed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another bill that introduced at the request of the Department of Transportation, and it would prohibit issuance of both a hardship, either a hardship driver permit or a probationary driver permit that would authorize a person to operate a commercial motor vehicle. Under current law, you can have your driver license suspended for your regular driver's license and still be able to operate a commercial motor vehicle, and this bill would not allow that to happen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Kelly, it's your turn. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kelly Taylor of the Department of Transportation, and this is one of the bills that we brought forth. The federal rules have changed, and they, in order for the states not to lose federal funds, we must comply with their laws. And they have said, like Janet just explained, if your regular driver's license is suspended, today you could get a hardship permit to continue to drive your commercial vehicle on the job or to and from work, that sort of thing. The feds have said, no, we don't want anyone with a suspended license on a hardship in a commercial vehicle, period. So we must stop doing this or we would risk losing federal funds. And this bill, Senate Bill 187, will bring us in compliance with that federal rule. I would ask the committee to support the bill.
Thank you, Kelly. Is there any questions? Representative Greenlee.
I'm a little confused, Kelly. Will you help me through this bill?
Sure.
What's a Class C permit?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee, let me explain. There are two basic levels of driver's licenses. The Class C is what you and I typically have for driving our passenger vehicle. Class C CDL, B CDL, and A CDL are for various types of commercial vehicles, be it buses, big trucks, hazardous material, tanks.
I got it. So 271 through 270, everything but 4, is talking about the non-commercial license. And 4, the new 4, just says that you can't operate one for a commercial vehicle, is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, that's correct. You could still, if you just had a base license and you weren't trying to drive a CDL, it doesn't affect you at all. It's just today, if your base license, your Class C is suspended, you could get a hardship. The difference between a hardship and probationary, just so you know, hardship is what you're issued if your license is suspended. Probationary is what's issued to you if your license is revoked. The only revocation that will allow you to have a hardship is a habitual offender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions of Kelly? Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
Bob, did you have any comments on that? Okay, thank you.
Is he okay with that?
He's okay with that, yeah. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill or Senate Bill. Having a tough time dealing with that. Senate Bill 187, and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 187.
Chair, I move 187 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Greenlee moves Senate Bill 187 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilman.
I have a little problem with this bill. I'm going to vote yes to get it on through the process, but this one is like the ag truck inspection. Just because the feds say we have to do it, I get tired of doing it.
Yeah. And generally tying dollars to it.
You should vote no.
Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, Ryan, you call the roll, please.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Excuse.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Excuse.
Representative
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I move that we place Senate Bill 187 on the consent calendar.
Representative Dingfelder moves that we place Senate Bill 187 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it's placed on the consent calendar. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 188, and that's Kelly. Janet, you want to?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 188 makes some changes to title fees for motor homes and to clarify that they were, which should not have last session been brought up to the $90 change of title and issuance of title fee that heavy trucks were brought under. They last session title fees were increased to $30 for most vehicles and to $90 for heavy trucks. And it's my understanding this bill is just to bring motor homes back to the typical $30. Mr. Chair, there is a revenue impact statement in your material today. It's minimal, but it does estimate an amount. And you have the Senate staff measure summary. The different sections of the bill, Mr. Chair, the first one is for transfer fee, then there's a duplicate fee, so that it's making the same change in a number of places.
Mm-hmm. Kelly?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Tater with the Department of Transportation. This is another bill that we brought forth, as Janet said, to make some technical housekeeping clarifications in the statute from the bill that passed last time, the one that created the OTA funding. It is to clarify the 26,000 and more, to say that it will be over 26,000, because right now that is the cutoff is 26,001 and up, and with it being 26,000, it was pulling in a few trucks it wasn't supposed to. I mean, it's just not the break that it's supposed to be in statute. It should be 26,001. So this will say that it's vehicles over 26,000 pounds. To remove the reference of truck tractor, it's not a common term used in Oregon law. It's kind of a thing we use for, you know, just talking in conversation, but it's not in law. So we're removing the reference to truck tractor. It wasn't needed. It just vehicles are not registered when they're large like that. It isn't by what they are, but their weight. And so by just referencing that it's over 26,000 pounds, it gets whatever it's supposed to be. And clarifying which trailers are subject to the $90 title fee. It's supposed to be the heavy trailers, the ones that are over 8,001. And excluding motorhomes. It was supposed to be commercial vehicles, not private-owned vehicles. So it is making some clarifications. The effect on revenue is very, very small. We estimate it to be less than around 27,000 in a full biennium, less of revenue. It was heavily supported over on the Senate side. I would ask the committee to support the bill.
The Kelly, the motorhomes that's being excluded, are those the big ones that look like the Greyhound buses?
Mr. Chair, it is all motorhomes. We don't register motorhomes by weight. We register them by length, and they pay a substantially higher registration fee than a passenger car does. And they are used for personal use, not commercial use. So the bill last session was really talking about heavy commercial vehicles versus passenger and private-owned vehicles.
And so, but a Greyhound bus would pay the $90 title fee, and a motorhome of the same size and looks and appearance wouldn't?
Mr. Chair, the Greyhound bus is a commercial vehicle registered by weight. The motorhome is a private vehicle not registered by weight, so yes, it would exclude them.
8 million bucks for the thing you can afford something. It's more than this. Right? Is that what you're saying? It's more than this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, we don't register them by weight, so it creates a whole new type of process trying to keep track of what their weight is. We register them by length. That's been historically the way they've been registered.
Not value, no.
Just correct, not value.
Yeah.
Now, that would be California.
Okay. Any questions with Kelly?
So, Mr. Chair.
Janet.
So, Mr. Chair, just to clarify that this is the title, not the registration that we're talking about.
Correct. This is title, not registration. Right.
Any other question? Don't look like there is, Kelly.
Thank you.
Before I close the work session, Bob, did you have any?
Okay.
You're okay. All right. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 188 and open a work session on House Bill 188. Senate Bill 188.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send
Senate Bill 188 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gilman moves Senate Bill 188 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? No, we need to call the roll, right?
Representative Mabry.
Not a good morning. Excuse.
Representative Zahner.
Yes.
Representative Beyer.
Excuse.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Motion for the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I move that we put Senate Bill 188 on the consent calendar.
Representative Gilman moves Senate Bill 188 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so done. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 246. Janet and Kelly. The Janet and Kelly show this morning.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 246 would authorize the Department of Transportation to presume that insurance certificates filed as proof of future financial responsibility contain the required coverage and that the certificates cover all vehicles registered in the name of the person. And just my only note, because Kelly will explain further, is that when you hear financial responsibility, just think of liability insurance, the required liability insurance. That's what, in the statutes, that's what financial responsibility means.
Thank you, Janet. Kelly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kelly Taylor, Department of Transportation. We brought this bill forward to clarify the intent. What the current statute says is that we would not accept, shall not accept a certificate, meaning an SR 22 insurance filing, unless all vehicles are registered in the name or operated by the person or covered. Historically, it has always been the insurance company and the person to know what vehicles they've owned, what they're covering, et cetera. And we just looked at this and said, you know, this is sort of implying like we're able to somehow verify that everything Kelly Taylor operates is covered under this policy, and really it's between Kelly Taylor and her insurance agent. When we get the insurance certificate in, historically it has been their responsibility. We just want the statute clarified that it is the person and their agent that is telling us this insurance is what meets the law, and we will then post it to the record and maintain it. And then, if you cancel the insurance company tells us, and we show that it's canceled. But there's really, it would be very, very difficult for us to try to find that every single vehicle you owned or operated was truly listed on that certificate. It really is between the insurance company and the person. So we asked for this clarification to be made, just so it would be, everybody understand that that's really what's happening and has happened forever. So, again, I would ask the committee to support the bill.
Thank you, Kelly. Representative Greenlee.
Kelly, I, as I remember, there are some provisions for corporations to self-insure. Does this change that in any way? I thought from reading the provisions it might affect that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenlee, it does not change self-insured one bit. Okay. No, they're totally unaffected by this bill. Thank you. It's a good question.
Representative Zahner.
Kelly, does it allow the uninsured driver to drive? Is it easier to skirt the rules of getting insurance on your cars if we pass this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Honor, no. It doesn't really change the law at all. It clarifies the wording that the department, what it says is, shall not accept unless all vehicles are registered in the name or operated are covered. We would not know that. The insurance agent will know that.
Right.
It has always been between the insurance agent and you to make sure you're properly covered. And so, no, this does not change the insurance laws about what should be covered or when you're insured or when you're not insured. It is about whether or not we would be able to tell whether or not everything that this policy that was written covers everything that you would operate. We would not know what all you'd be operating. That would be between you and your insurance agent.
Does the insurance company have to notify you that they do have insurance or not have insurance?
Mr. Chair and Reverend Honor, yes, they send us in a form that tells us your name and the policy number, et cetera. Again, we just don't know. We don't see underneath it for what vehicles it covers.
Thank you.
Janet?
Mr. Chair, I just want to make one other distinction here. This is future responsibility filing. This isn't what most people file. This is not me filling out my registration and signing that I have insurance. This is the future responsibility filing that someone, it's an SR-22 form that someone that's been suspended or had some other reason for the agency to need to know that they have insurance on a more regular basis.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Janet. That's a good explanation because most of the population, we don't see their insurance coverage. We don't even see a document. The insurance companies are updating the records electronically saying that my vehicle has insurance or when it's not, my vehicle's uninsured. That's what law enforcement looks at. These certificates are when I have been caught driving uninsured, have been suspended for it, and now I am filing proof of insurance with a piece of paper to DMV. It's posted to my driving record when the coverage begins, and if the coverage ends, I get another piece of paper comes in and cancels it. So it's a different type of document than your general insurance.
Thank you, Kelly. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 246 and open a work session on Senate Bill 246.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 246 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dingfelder moves Senate Bill 246 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Ryan, will you call the roll, please? Okay, Ryan, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Beyer.
Excuse.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlee.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Excuse.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Consent calendar again.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that we place Senate Bill 246 on the consent calendar.
Representative Dingfelder moves that Senate Bill 246 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 247.
Here's Kelly.
Yeah, here's Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 247. Repeals authority that the Department of Transportation has to accept bonds or cash deposits instead of insurance liability policies to meet the requirements of financial responsibility for vehicle ownership and operation. And what you have at your place is the statutes that are being repealed because they don't appear in the bill. And they are 806090. The arrows point to those statutes, 806100, 806115, and 806260. And Kelly's here to explain the bill.
Okay, thank you, Janet.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Kelly Tater with the Department of Transportation. We were just talking about insurance on the last bill, and I was mentioning that most of us just have insurance through our insurance company. But there is a provision that's been on the books for a long, long time that very, very few people use. In fact, there's 10 people in the state using it. And that says, rather than going to your insurance company and having an insurance policy, you could put up something worth $60,000, like property as a bond, or a cash deposit to cover an accident. Well, this process transfers from the state treasurer over to ODOT a few years ago. The state treasurer's office used to keep track of this. And once we had it and realized what was going on, we realized the difficulty it was to make sure that public protection really was in place. When somebody puts up property or something, they may sell it. It may have a lien against it. We won't know about it unless, for example, Janet was in an accident and went to put a claim against it. She would come to us to liquefy that bond to pay for her damages. And we would then try to find the property and go through the process of trying to sell it. And then we might find out there was a lien against it or it's already been repossessed. It can get quite ugly. And we would be in the middle of third-party claims to pay out on insurance and to pay out on damages. the Attorney General's office has been concerned about the process, because it would, if we were going to do this, we'd have to take the person through court to liquidate the bond. It would require AG's assistance with all of that. It could get quite messy. There are only 10 people in the state that are using it. The majority of people use insurance. The $60,000 level may not be enough to keep up with the value. The land may not have the value of $60,000. So we've asked for this part of the law to be repealed. In the back of the bill, you'll see that there's a whole bunch of dark new language. It's not really new language. What we found when we were putting this bill together with legislative counsel is that other bond deposit type scenarios have been tacked on to the car financial responsibility laws along the way through the years. And what you see at the back of the bill is simply picking those pieces up and moving them to their own statute so they still exist. So we're not affecting those two programs, which are weather modification, which I believe is cloud seeding, or maybe rain dances, and ambulance stuff. So we're not affecting those at all. We're leaving those intact, but we're just moving them out of the motor vehicle code because they were put in there years ago, probably because somebody found that there was similar language and tacked it on there. That happens. All we're doing is saying, everyone, you get insurance the same way. You don't have a bond or deposit, which is very few people have used it, and it does have the potential of being pretty messy for us. So, and again, anytime you create an exception to the rule and only have a few people doing it, your cost to monitor it go up. So we prefer to just have the insurance companies be responsible for keeping track of insurance and paying out on claims and get us out of the middle of it. That's what this bill will do. I would ask the committee to support the bill.
What's going to happen to those 10 people?
Mr. Chair and members of honor, after this bill passes, we would notify them that they would need to get insurance like you and I get insurance through an insurance company.
You one of the 10?
No, I'm not.
Is there any other questions? Representative Greenland.
Back to the self-insurance question. This is a form of self-insurance, so I would assume now that if you have a financially sound company like WorldCom or something like that, they won't be able to...
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenland, self-insurers are under a different statute. This must not affect them.
Is any other questions of Kelly? Guess not, Kelly.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 247 and open the work session on Senate Bill 247.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 247 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dingfelder moves Senate Bill 247 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Mabry.
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, about entire process. I apologize for being late. I wasn't sleeping in. I was down at the Senate Transportation Committee testifying.
Doing good work.
Well, we hope so. at any rate, please excuse my tardiness.
We will. Ryan, will you call the roll, please?
That wasn't a discussion.
Representative
Byers. Excuse.
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlake.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously again. Another consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I recommend that we place Senate Bill 247 on the consent calendar, or I move that we place Senate Bill 247 on the consent calendar.
Representative Dingfelder moves Senate Bill 247 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Let's see. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 276A in April. What happened, Kelly? How come you're not on this one, too?
Good morning. For the record, I'm April McVeigh with Oregon Independent Auto Dealers, Chairman Brown, members of the Transportation Committee. House Bill 276A takes care of minor glitches in the 1999 Oregon Independent Auto Dealer Association's education bill. One, the changes in lines 14 and 15 grandfathers in existing dealers when they want additional business licenses. The situation comes up when a current dealer wants to start another car lot with a different name. They must have another license with a different dealer number. The dealer has to take pre-licensing even though they have been doing continuing education since 2000. The association feels pre-licensing for existing dealers does not make sense. Two, the changes in lines 16 through 25 modify the exemptions from dealer education requirements. They clarify that only Oregon franchise businesses have exemptions from dealer education. Those are franchise dealers, new RV dealers, insurance auto auctions who hold a dealer's license, and manufactured home dealers. The second change would require a franchise dealer from Montana who has a used car dealership in Oregon to have Oregon dealer education requirements. Oregon has two education providers, the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association and a private company called Dealer Title Services. The Senate vote on this measure was 29-1. The Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association urges your passage of this legislation.
Thank you, April. Is there any questions? Seeing none. Thank you. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 276A. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 276A. And Kelly, did you have any comments? Or do you want to open any can of worms dealing with auto dealers licensing?
Not today, Mr. Chair. Maybe on another day.
Okay. entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 276 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gilman moves Senate Bill 276A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Ryan, will you call the roll?
Representative Dingfelder.
Aye.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenlight.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative
Byer. Excuse.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, I move we place 276A on the consent calendar.
Representative Gilman moves that we place Senate Bill 276A on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so done.
What happened to 247?
Is there any other business, Janet? Do we have
a... Yeah, what?
Nope.
Oh,
yeah, we had some other bills. Did Representative Mayberry want to vote on those bills?
Sure, if you would want to offer me that opportunity.
How far down do we go?
182.
Representative Mayberry moves.
You need to suspend the rules.
I move we suspend the minutes to allow Representative Mayberry to make up for his tardiness.
Should we do it on all of them?
Yeah, one time. One
Representative Greenlick moves the rules be suspended to allow Representative Mayberry to vote on Senate Bill 182.
Aye.
Is that all we need, Janet? Just Senate Bill 187.
Aye.
Senate Bill
188. Aye.
When did you come in here, John? Senate Bill 246.
Aye.
That was
whatever else you missed.
No, I didn't.
No,
you did not.
Okay. That's all we need.
Mm-hmm. Pass them so quick.
Nothing else? We are adjourned.